receive a call from Stephen Harper. You guys excited? He's going to give you a call, and he's going to ask that you would be his spiritual advisor. And he's going to ask you for biblical insight and perspectives on issues, situations that come up in the world, and he's going to ask you to give input into those situations. And in return, he's going to resource you with everything that you will need at any point and any time. Now, this is all above board. There's nothing illegal with any of this, right? So he's going to do this. If you'll be his advisor and input, speak into his life and situation, circumstances, things that the government's involved, things that they're looking at, and it's going to affect culture, direction of where people are at, where they're going. And he'll resource you with everything that you'll need in your life. All you need to do is give him a call. He'll give you his personal line, and you just give him a call, and he'll do this for you. Now imagine never making use of the call. Going, hey, well, I'll do that, and I'll speak into the situation, and I'll, kind of represent biblically where things are at as best as I can, right? But you never call. It's there for you, but you never call. In Matthew chapter 7, verses 7 to 11, Jesus works extremely hard in trying to convince followers, God's followers, that God is worth pursuing. And even though it's a made-up scenario, it's not an uncommon one. That God calls us as his people to speak into culture, bring a biblical perspective into the world, to represent him, and in return, he resources us with everything that we need in order to reflect his heart in the world. And all Jesus says that we need to do in order to do this, that he'll give us everything, is to make a call. This is the way Jesus puts it in Matthew 7, verses 7 to 11. Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, the one who seeks finds, and to the one who knocks, the door will be opened. Which of you, if your son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a snake? If you then, though you are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him? Sometimes we use passages like this to back our belief that God will give us anything that we ask for. He promises to do that, right? Ask, and you'll receive. So he'll give us just anything that we ask for. If we're relentless in asking God for physical health or financial stability or success in this or that, and we don't doubt, can't doubt, right? Then God has to give us those things because he promises to. That's not what Jesus is talking about here. We need to remember the context that this passage is in. Jesus began the Sermon on the Mount by saying this: blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Jesus is saying that his hearers will receive whatever it is that they most need in order to grow in resembling the heart and mind of God if they just call out to him, if they continue to pursue relationship with him. When Jesus tells us to ask and seek and knock, he's telling us how we're to grow in developing the character of God's kingdom into our lives. The words ask, seek, and knock are written in the present imperative tense, and the present imperative tense commands continual action. It's not something that you do once. It's kind of like asking your kids to clean up their rooms. I thought there would be a bigger reaction than that. A continual call to action. You need to continually ask and ask and ask and seek and seek and seek and knock and knock and knock. It's not just a one-time thing. Those who want to reflect the heart of God, be more righteous than the Pharisees. Jesus said, your righteousness needs to surpass that of the Pharisees and religious leaders. Those who want a righteousness that is greater than the Pharisees need to continue to pursue God and call out to him and cry out to him and rely on him and trust in him for everything that they need to reflect his heart in the world. So in order to be transformed at a heart level, followers of Jesus must continually long for and acquire the heart of God himself. Right? It's not just about looking a certain way on the outside, and so many of us, and I'll get to this in just a little bit, so many of us settle for that. We look a certain way and we're good enough with that, right? But God's whole purpose in bringing Jesus and Jesus dying on the cross and all the talk about you need a new heart and a new spirit within you and you need the mind of Christ, Paul talks about, it's so that we would acquire not just things from God, but God himself. Right? The presence of God transforming our hearts and our minds so that we look and act and think, right, more like him. So if you lack poverty of spirit, if you don't mourn over your sin or the sin of other people, if sin in the world doesn't seem to affect you much, you're not devastated by darkness that exists in the world, then pray. Pray that God would make you aware and sensitive to the fact of the degree of darkness in the world so that you would mourn. You'd become a person of poverty of spirit. You'd mourn over sin, yours and others. If you lack compassion, then continually pray that God would increase your hunger for mercy. Seek out opportunities to practice being merciful. If you have a retaliatory spirit, if it's easy for you to get angry, then pray for God to transform you into a peacemaker. Seek out opportunities to create peace, to reconcile people, and to restore relationships. We can't forget the backdrop of this sermon, right? Pharisees, not all of them, but the general attitude of a typical Pharisee was that they were righteous before God based on what they did, right? So they had practiced certain things, and they felt good about that, and that was good enough. From the outside, they looked religious. They prayed and they fasted. They gave money to the poor. And everybody saw because they did all these things in public to be seen, to let other people know how righteous they were. Look at me. But inside, Jesus says, they were like dead men's bones. They were rotting and putrid, disgusting on the inside. People who truly loved God, longed for God, need to have a righteousness that surpasses the external righteousness of a Pharisee that just looks good on the outside. Now the question is, why is it so hard for us to cry out to him, to look to him, to rely on God to transform us on the inside, where we reflect his heart and his mind to the world? Why do we so easily settle for just looking good on the outside? And maybe you're different. Maybe you don't settle for looking good on the outside, but there are times when I settle for looking good on the outside. I don't have time to go further into pursuit of God. I'm too busy. And it's a sad state when all of a sudden that moment turns into multiple moments, and then more moments, and more moments, and pretty soon, you know, there's a day, and then there's a week, and then there's a month. And North American Christianity is hurting because we don't make use of those moments, and we don't draw close to God, and pretty soon, those moments are growing and growing and multiplying and multiplying, and when we talk about thousands and thousands of followers of Jesus who are missing moments where they can draw close and pursue God, they don't realize what it is that they're missing. Not just personally, but how it affects or not affects culture, the people around them. And we just have no clue. We don't have any clue because we're living in a state where this is normal for us. Why is it so hard for us to want more of God? Why is it so easy for us to just settle? Well, the answer is it's just easier to settle. You have a choice between doing something or watching something on TV, somebody else doing it. We just watch someone else do it. That's why reality television shows are so popular, because we like watching other people live life. And it's not real, and you know, it is real, it's not real. But that's how we spend a lot of our time, right? Watching life, watching others live. Jesus in Luke 11:27 tells us that the greatest commandment is this: to love the Lord our God with all our heart, all our soul, with all our strength, and with all our mind. There's nothing left over for anything else. It's all invested in pursuing God and seeking Him. It's a great benefit to us to have the character of God formed within us, that we would have the heart and the mind of God. It's a huge blessing. But it's a result that comes from our desire to be with God. And we need to get past that place where what we long for is an easier life. And that's what we pursue, because it's ingrained in our character, because of sin and the presence of sin in our lives. We want God to help us get rid of the obstacles that make life difficult. And if He would do that, then we would find so much more joy in life. And God is saying, I want to be with you in life. Rely on me, trust in me in life, in the midst of obstacles and hardship and challenges and the monotony and all of those things. And I'll bring joy to your life because I'll be with you in the midst of that. I'm not going to take away all those things, because the goal of our lives is that we would look more and more like Jesus. We'd acquire the character of God's kingdom. What would be normal on earth is what's normal in heaven. That's God's desire. Jesus taught His disciples to pray, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be Thy name. Thy kingdom come, Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And He wants to bring that into our hearts. Jesus is reminding His followers here that you need to be aware of this, right? The attitude of the traditional Pharisee, it's not good enough. We need to be in continual pursuit of God, not because God is moving away from us, but because we are always moving away from Him. Because of the presence of sin in our lives, the movement of our hearts naturally in our flesh is always to move away from God. That's why we need to be in constant pursuit of the Father. Not because He's moving away, but because we are. The flow of sin in the world, it's an ocean current we can't see, but it's taking us away from the Father. And Jesus is calling people. You need to pursue. There's room for God here for you to pursue Him. He's welcoming this. He's open to this. So just pursue Him. Jesus wants all of us to understand that God is worthy of the entirety of our lives. Holding back does nothing good for us. Now, it doesn't mean that with all kinds of just sheer effort and willpower that we can do the right things so that we can please God in every way. If we get into that mindset, well, I just need to be better, and I'll just pull up my bootstraps and I'll do this. If we do that without relying on God, calling out to Him, seeking Him, relying on Him, trusting in Him for strength, right, from His Spirit, then we're just modern day Pharisees trying to do righteousness, trying to live righteously in the world apart from the presence of God. Apart from relying on God for our life, for our source of life. Jesus says you need to cry out to the Father. You need to seek Him. You need to pursue Him. So our work is to continually move towards Him and pursue an ongoing, moment-by-moment relationship with Him. The question that I have is, why didn't the Pharisees and why don't so many of us see the need for this ongoing pursuit, this daily moment-by-moment pursuit of God? Why do we seem to settle again for so much less? Well, I think there are three primary things, and they kind of flow out of each other. The first is that we're so used to doing things ourselves. We rely on ourselves. And I don't know if this is to my shame, but I could have called more people. Just yesterday, I rented a truck. I got Ashley's price, and she works at the airport and rents out vehicles, and so it was a great price on a truck. Because I called her, I said, "Hey, can I rent a truck? I don't have a truck." And I walked by, checked out, see if Cliff's truck was around, and no, Cliff's truck wasn't there. And so I'm thinking, what's the easiest way to get a truck, right? Because I don't have a truck. "Hey, Cliff, can I borrow your truck again?" And it wasn't there. I thought, "Oh, okay, I'm not gonna bother him, and I'm not gonna call Valen." Everybody calls Valen for everything, and and he's very generous and willing to share. But have you ever been in his truck, right? Like I, woo. You know what, it works, and we don't have a truck. It works really well. I rented a truck. Great price, by the way. I'm not sure if Ashley could give that deal to everybody who calls, but it was a great price. Really nice truck. really nice truck. And got it done. Everything that needed to be done. Living out in Raleigh, getting stuff to the dump, and all that. It's all got so much of it done. I'm so excited about that. Right, got it done. All I'm saying is, it's so much easier to do it yourself than it is if you don't have something that you require to ask. Father says, ask and you will receive. Seek and you're going to find. Knock and I'm going to open the door for you. So we're not used to doing this because we're so used to living our lives on our own. If we want wisdom, then we muster up wisdom. If we want strength, well, we use what we have. We want financial stability, then we focus in on that and we try to balance budgets and take care of our finances so we provide for our future. Nothing wrong with having wisdom and using it, strength and using it, and financial stability and all that, and planning for the future. But all I'm saying is that we're so used to doing all of living life without God. Secondly, we're not used to thinking that our lives are actually bound up. Our lives are bound up in God. That we find life in God. We're not used to thinking that way. God is an external that we invite in. And so all of humanity, there was a time where you did not know the necessity or the joy of inviting God into your life. God says that life was to be lived with me right in the mix, right in the presence as the source of life. Our lives are bound up in his life. We do not live except in him. Now, you can live, but you don't really live. Jesus said there's an abundant life that only comes. It only comes through our relationship with him, and we're connected then to the Father. Apart from him, there is no life. There is no life. Jesus said, "I am the way and the truth and the life." We're not used to thinking like that. Thirdly, most of us, we like to have a clear idea of where we and others stand in relationship to God. And we like to know who's in and who's out. And acting like a Pharisee, being righteous on the externals, gives us an idea that we're in, and pursuing an ongoing relationship with Jesus where we ask, seek, and knock isn't required because we're already in. It's what's called a closed set, right? You're already in. You're already as righteous as you could be as a Pharisee, and so you don't need to do anymore. That's the way the religious people thought, that you could rely on just those kind of external practices. What Jesus is moving us towards through the Sermon on the Mount is the need for his followers to maintain an ongoing, persistent, moment-by-moment relationship with his Father, to remain extremely close to him at all times. Blogger and author Sheila Pritchard writes, "A visitor to an Australian outback cattle ranch was intrigued by the seemingly endless miles of farming country with no signs of any fences. He asked a local rancher how he kept track of his cattle. The rancher replied, "Oh, that's no problem. Out here we dig wells instead of building fences." We dig wells. We don't build fences. There are no fences. Why? Because the cattle come to the source of life. The cattle come to the well, and they stay within proximity of the well. If we view Christianity as a bounded set, as we need to build parameters and boundaries, and once we cross into them, once we move into them, then we're good. We don't need to move very far, because how much more could we have? We're already Christians. We already know God. I already prayed the prayer when I was 4 or 6 or 10 or 20 or 30 or whenever I prayed the prayer to ask Christ into my life. What more is there? Jesus is saying that it's not about a closed, a bounded set. It's about a centered set where we always are moving towards God because he's our source of life. And we don't think of the boundaries. We don't think of who's in and who's out. We just think about movement towards God. Are we moving as a people towards the heart of the Father? So some people may be extremely far away, but they're moving towards the Father. Some may be very close, and you go, wow, they're like really righteous, right? Have you ever said, that person, if they were a Christian, they'd be a better Christian than me. They're not a Christian. They're better than me, right? But they're moving away from God. They're very close in how they appear, but they're moving away. It's not about who's in based on external things. It's about who's moving towards the heart of the Father. Does it make sense? If we view Christianity just as a bounded set, as boundaries, we'll pay a lot of attention to the boundaries and very little to the source of our life. And we turn into modern-day Pharisees. We'll have clearly defined parameters as to what constitutes a Christian. When did you pray the prayer, right? Well, I don't know. You can't tell me when you prayed the prayer? Who was with you when you prayed the prayer, right? We focus in on that moment. And not that that's an unimportant moment, but it's a moment. And the more important moment is what happens next. Are we, in our next moment, still moving towards Jesus? Another feature of a bounded set is that they're static, right? And I've already mentioned this a little bit. Once within the set, there's no further attention to definition or development. None of that's needed. For example, if you have an apple, whatever apple, Macintosh apple, and you go to the store, and it's really bruised, it's brown, it's gushy, right? And you go, that's a disgusting apple. It's like rotten or something. That's like there's fruit flies. And you go, you're not going to buy it, right? You know what? In a closed set, a bounded set, it doesn't matter. It's still a Macintosh apple. You're not going to buy it, but it's still an apple. And what happens in Christianity, when we focus in solely on the parameters, we can stay within the parameter, and we can be getting more and more rotten on the inside, moving away from the Father. And we go, well, I'm a Christian. Because what I did, right? I did that back then. I was baptized. I grew up in a tradition where baptism was key. I went through First Communion. I did my the classes that I need to go to, and I was baptized, and so I'm good. I love my relatives, but most of them rely upon that tradition as their means of security in life. But they rest on that history. I was baptized, and so I'm good. It doesn't matter what I do. So it's very static, this bounded set. But assessing our spiritual standing before God requires that we look beyond boundaries to the source of our life, to the heart of the Father. We continue to ask, and we continue to seek, and we continue to knock, we continue to pursue him, because we realize that we have no life apart from him. And distance from him is never a good thing. And boundaries aren't good enough. for security. We tend to, and I don't want to, I'll stir up some stuff and I won't answer it. I won't address it. But the whole eternal security thing, right? We get big into, are we eternally saved? Or is this an eternal security thing? Are we good or not? Look, if you're following God, if you're close to God, then you are eternally saved. Because that's the whole purpose and movement of the gospel, is to have us be in a continual relationship with Jesus, relying on him, trusting in him, looking to him. And that whole eternal security thing isn't even a question anymore, because we're with God, right? We're moving in unison with Jesus. He's at work in our hearts and our lives. And if he's with us, we have no problems. There's no issues. But we, gravitate to, if I'm having a bad day, and we always move towards that, right? Well, is Jesus' grace sufficient for you in good days and bad days? Are you moving towards him in the midst of heartache, challenge? Do you cry out to him after you sin? Do you repent? Do you confess? Then you're moving towards Jesus, and you're relying on his grace, and his grace is rich, and his grace is sufficient for you. The principle of ask, seek, and knock is how Jesus desires us to do relationship with God. As a parent, it's hard to think about this, because if my kids were always asking, seeking, and knocking, look, would you just figure it out yourself? Do it yourself, right? Oh! And there are times, obviously, God, when we grow in our faith, we don't have to come to him with the same questions that we would have as really like babies just learning how to walk, and that kind of reliance. Paul talks about that. He talks about, we crave spiritual milk, and you should be having more than just spiritual milk and all this. So the whole point is to grow up in our salvation and our faith. But it's how we're supposed to do our Christian life. It's, again, what Sheila Pritchard would call our centered set, where we define God as our center, a source, where we find our lives, right? We're always calling out to him and crying out to him. One of the reasons why Jesus says ask, seek, and knock is because persistence is required in a Christian life. One of the reasons why Christianity doesn't work for some people is because they quit. They quit pursuing God. They get used to the distance, and they go, it's just not working. God's not giving me what I want, right? And maybe it started off as a misunderstanding of why it is that they need God in the first place. God, you need to take away my burdens, my anxiety, my troubles, all those things. And he does. Many times he does, right? But he also has us walk through those times so that we get stronger in our faith and our ability to trust him, so that we don't need him always to come through and remove those things for us. Maybe there are times, again, where you feel extremely distant from God. So distant, in fact, that you don't feel like praying, like asking him for anything. But somewhere on the inside of you comes this longing to cry out to him. It's what I mentioned earlier to the kids. There are times where what you need an embrace from someone who loves you. You need to know that someone cares about you in a way that is really critical to you. The Father, the gap is, do I believe that the Father loves me like that? That he loves me more than that? Because that's what we need to get through to and begin to embrace that belief, that understanding that God is so in love with us that he withholds nothing from us that is good for us. It's messier to live life like this. It's easier in a bounded set to be a Pharisee, because then you can just make it's really clear. Do you smoke? Well, then you're not a Christian. Do you drink? Well, then you're not a Christian. Do you play cards? Then you're not a Christian. Right? Those typical things that we at least when I was growing up in my faith, I came across them. I didn't have too many friends who would actually buy into that. But I heard about it, right? And it was before me primarily, all those things. Typical modern-day Phariseeism. And Jesus says again, man, if we would just find our lives in God and pursue him and have him as our source, it would be no trouble to ask and to seek and to knock, because he's very open to... one of the reasons why you don't call people when you need help, you need an ingredient, you don't want to put them out, right? I don't want to bother you. God goes, bother me. That's what I'm here for. Speak into my heart here. Speak to me. Cry out to me. That's what I'm here for, right? To hear from you and to be pursued by you. That's why I'm here, right? Our neighbors wouldn't say that. I'm not here for you to knock, keep knocking. Look, get your own drill, right? Get your own ladder. No, we're out of onions. Go to the store, get your own onions. God doesn't work that way. In trying to help us understand the benefits of pursuing a dynamic relationship with God, Jesus asks, which of you, if your son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a snake? If you then, though you are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him? Well, the implication, I think, is pretty clear. God gives good things to every one of his children who asks for them, who seeks him, who keeps on knocking and waiting for the door to be opened, continues to pursue them. One of the reasons why Christians fail to pray is they doubt that God will answer their prayers. Sometimes he doesn't answer prayers because our motives are selfish. James 4:3 tells us that there are times when you ask, you do not receive, because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. But here's the thing, and it's key if we want to understand how committed God is to granting the very best of who he is and what he has for us. Jesus is very clear on two things. One, he says, you're evil. I love how he soft pedals that. It's not just that there's times where you're kind of sinful. No, he goes, dude, like, you're evil. you're evil. And though you're evil, you know how to give good gifts to your children, to people that you love. It's common grace that God bestows on everybody, right? Common goodness, common love dispenses on all people everywhere to give good gifts to our children. And Jesus is very, very clear about that. But here is God's commitment to us that solidifies the importance and the benefit of crying out to God, the verifications that God will grant us everything that is good. He'll grant this to us. He's already given the very best to us. He's withheld nothing of the very best because he's already given us his son. He's given his son to die on a cross for evil people, sinful people, who didn't beforehand say, gee, you know what, I'm really moving in a good direction here, God. Could you maybe help me out and get me out to the next level? And so could you send your son to die on a cross? It's very clear in the Bible. God says, I sent my son into the world, and that even though you were sinners, right, Christ died for you and me. So why, if God gave us his very best in his son, why would he withhold anything of goodness that we need in order to walk in a world that would be, in a way that would be honoring to him, a blessing to him, and would evidence the character of the kingdom in our hearts and lives? Why would he withhold anything if he's already given us his son? And we forget that. The question comes back, and I'm going to wrap up with this, is but there's things that I ask for and I don't receive, and I think that they're good things. We will never understand why it is that we receive certain things and other things we don't. But it's a guarantee, it's a promise from God that he will grant everything that we need that's good for us. doesn't make life easy. It's good for us so that we look at a heart level. We have the mind of Jesus. He'll give us everything that we need in order to look more like Jesus. Some of the reason why we go through hardship and heartache is so that we'll walk through that and we'll look more like Jesus. And it only comes when we persist. We refuse to relent from pursuing the heart of the Father. And we see God's goodness after time. We look back and we go, wow. I mean, it was amazing to think how I got through that. It was God's grace and his goodness and love. You guys, some of you really know what that's about. If that's a level of commitment that he has to us, that he starts off giving us the very biggest and the very best of who he is in his Son, why would he withhold anything of his goodness that we need in order to walk in a way in the world that reflects his heart and his mind? Ask. Seek and knock. Worship team, come on up.